Today we'll dive deep into Charlie Munger and his mental models for product building. Charlie Munger is not a product, obviously. This is a slight deviation from what we normally do on this podcast, but there is a ton of lessons that we can all learn in product building using the mental models of Charlie Munger. I've used Charlie Munger's talks captured in the book The Poor Charlie's Almanac as a reference. A lot of Charlie's philosophy and his works and his talks can be summarized into the following highlights. Lifelong learning and doing. Charlie was a month short of 100 years of age when he passed away. And throughout his life, he was learning and putting various models he has learned into practice. Secondly, intellectual curiosity. Charlie was genuinely curious about how taking the best from every field and how we can apply them in our own work. Number three, avoidance of envy and resentment. Charlie quips in his interview with Becky Quick of CNBC that envy is probably the only vice where you don't get to have any fun. Number four, reliability. Charlie has said in one of his talks that if there is one aspect that could make you successful, it is to be reliable. Do what you say you would do. Number five, learning from others' mistakes. Charlie says that the least efficient way to learn is by learning from your own mistakes. And the best way to learn is by learning from others' mistakes. Number six, perseverance. Charlie has repeated this over and over again. Much of their success at Berkshire Hathaway was due to sitting on your ass investing. That is, decide and go all in and don't keep changing direction. In this world of pivots, it's hard to be decisive, to stick to your vision. We also learned actually from Jeff Bezos in episode 3 that it is important to be firm on the vision and flexible on the details of how we manifest that vision. Changing the tactics is absolutely necessary, but changing the vision is antithetical. Objectivity, being non-attached to the business or investment. Falling in love with the problem, not with the solution, is super important when building insanely great products. So be very objective and not be carried away by emotion or attachment to a particular solution. Number eight, willingness to test one's own beliefs. Charlie was very open-minded about testing his own beliefs and not being dogmatic about them. Again, something we learned from Jeff Bezos and others. Have strong opinions, loosely held. And lastly, invert, always invert. Charlie repeats this often. Something he learned from the mathematician Jacobi. Always take a situation and invert it. For example, his whole philosophy towards a successful and happy life is it's not about doing things that will make him successful and happy, but it is about avoiding making stupid mistakes that a majority of folks make that will definitely lead to failure and unhappiness. Here is another example of inverse, always invert. Most people think, I want to be independent so that I can be rich. But Charlie's viewpoint when he got started in the business of buying businesses and investing in stocks was I wanted to be rich so that I can be independent. He never forgot sound principles taught by his grandfather to concentrate on the task immediately in front of him and to control spending. Following this conservative approach, Charlie seized opportunities to build wealth. He sharpened his business acumen by handling negotiations and contracts. You improve on your weakness by doing it more. You don't need to do this, but if you want to, let's say, become stronger at finances, then take on the financial planning, make mistakes, learn, and you will definitely become better at it. If you're naturally inclined, you could even become a master of that craft. But if you're not, and you're not interested in it, then leave it to someone else who is, but don't try to do it yourself. Munger tolls his law firm is not just about the money. Mirroring the way Charlie conducts his life, the firm has enviable record of quietly providing pro bono assistance to support groups for impoverished and disadvantaged people in the Los Angeles community. To this day, Charlie continues to influence the firm's attorneys, reminding them, you don't need to take the last dollar, and choose clients as you would friends. These are some of the fundamental principles by which Charlie led his life. At the 75th anniversary of See's Candies, one of Berkshire Hathaway's businesses, Charlie said, I am a biography nut myself, and I think when you're trying to teach the great concepts that work, it helps to tie them into the lives and personalities of the people who developed them. I think you learn economics better if you make Adam Smith your friend. That sounds funny, making friends among the eminent dead. But if you go through life making friends with the eminent dead who had the right ideas, I think it'll work better for you in life and work better in education as well. It's way better than just giving the basic concepts. Here are a few perspectives from some of the family members remembering Charlie Munger. Wendy Munger. His morality tales were more straightforward. I remember the story my dad told his kids, then ranging from age 5 to 25, about a financial officer at one of his companies who made a mistake that resulted in the loss of hundreds of thousands of dollars to the company. As soon as this officer realized his mistake, he went to the president of the company and told him about it. My dad told us that the president then said, "This was a terrible mistake, and we don't want you ever make another one like it. But people make mistakes, and we can forgive that. You did the right thing, which was to admit your mistake. If you had tried to hide the mistake or cover it up for even a short time, you would be out of this company. As it is, we'd like you to stay." I think this small story in morality that Wendy is talking about is very important. Facet of Charlie and Warren Buffett. Like, I think Buffett talks about it, reputation is extremely important for Berkshire Hathaway. And you can build reputation for decades and decades, but you can lose it all within one single minute by doing something not right. The next one that talks about Munger is David Borthwick. Even when not reading, father was often so deep in contemplation that a routine drive to take Molly and Wendy back to Pasadena could have turned into an excursion to San Bernardino without mom calling out the correct freeway turnoffs. This talks about how Munger was deeply focused, and he had the superpower to turn everything off when he was focused on something. I think that's super important for building building products where you could easily get distracted, carried away by so many different things, but keeping the focus on solving the customer pain points and working backwards from the customer and building a beautiful customer experience through an amazing product. I think that focus is extremely important. Going back to David Borthwick's comment here, father's ability to Chinese wall off the most intrusive distractions from whatever mental task he was engaged in, a practice alternatively amusing and irritating if you were trying to get his attention, accounts as much as anything else for his success. Despite being largely self-taught, this is a quote from the book, Ben Franklin was spectacularly successful in such diverse fields as journalism, publishing, printing, philanthropy, public service, science, diplomacy, and inventing. Much of Franklin's success was due to the essential nature of the man, most especially his appetite for hard work. I have underlined this in my notes, appetite for hard work. I think in this world where everything is about instant gratification and finding the easy way out, I think there is no substitute for hard work. I actually just read a nice tweet from Alex Hormozi, I believe his name. He talks about this, you know, this quote about a work smart, not hard, applies only when you're working against people or competing with people who are not really that smart. But when you're competing with smart people, just like you are, then the only thing that really differentiates you is working hard, actually. I really like that perspective. Going back to the quote here in the book, but also his insatiable, willing mind that enabled him to easily master each new field of endeavor he chose to undertake. That willingness to learn, I think that's the insatiable willing mind, which is like willingness to learn and never be complacent or satisfied and always trying to learn more. Again, going back to the quote, it is not surprising that Charlie Munger considers Franklin as his greatest hero. For Munger is also largely self-taught and shares many of Franklin's unique characteristics. Like Franklin, Charlie has made himself into a grandmaster of preparation, patience, discipline, and objectivity. He has parlayed these four attributes into great success in both personal and business endeavors, especially in his investing. Charlie's multiple mental models approach to business analysis and assessment, I think, very much applicable for us product builders. These models serve as a framework for gathering, processing, and acting on information. They borrow from and neatly stitch together the analytical tools, methods, and formulas from such traditional disciplines such as history, psychology, physiology, mathematics, engineering, biology, physics, chemistry, statistics, economics, and so on. As John Muir observed about the interconnectedness of nature, quote, when we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe, unquote. My note here, thinking in terms of systems, I think is what is being called out here. Thinking in systems, right? And nothing exists in a silo or independent in this universe, or even in enterprises, startups, products. They're all interconnected. And so thinking in systems, something I myself have to really work on, actually, because I tend to think a lot in independent things, and then being able to connect them is super important. There's nothing in this universe that actually exists alone. Everything is connected to everything, and everything has an impact on everything else. Going back to the book here, especially the important examples of these models include the redundancy and backup system models from engineering, the compound interest model from mathematics, the breakpoint, tipping moment, and autocatalysis models in physics and chemistry, the modern Darwinian synthesis model from biology, and cognitive misjudgment models from psychology. These are all models that Charlie has used throughout his life, whether in assessing a business, return on investments, in stock investing as well. Munger, like his partner Warren Buffett, believes a successful investment career boils down to only a handful of decisions. So when Charlie likes a business, he makes a very large bet and typically holds the position for a long period. Charlie calls it sit on your ass investing and cites its benefits. You're paying less to brokers, you're listening to less nonsense, and if it works, the tax system gives you an extra 1, 2, or 3 percentage points per annum. In his view, a portfolio of 3 companies is plenty of diversification. One of the key things I learned actually from Charlie that we can all apply to product development and life is avoid doing stupid things. In response to a question from a young shareholder on how to succeed in life, Charlie chimed in, don't do cocaine, don't race trains, and avoid AIDS situations, unquote. One of his favorite quips is, all I want to know is where I'm going to die, so I'll never go there. In business and in life, he summarily eliminates the unpromising portions of the chessboard, freeing this time and attention for the more productive regions. Quickly eliminate the big universe of what not to do and follow up with a fluent multidisciplinary attack on what remains. Then act decisively when and only when the right circumstances appear. I think there are some really key lessons here, right? Like quickly eliminating the big universe of stupid things that you shouldn't be doing, right? And then you follow up fluently with multidisciplinary attack on what remains. So what remains? The space, if you will, of the solution area or things that you could be doing becomes much smaller because you've eliminated a lot of things that you shouldn't be doing because they're stupid. And then you go all in, be very decisive, and you go all in at the right circumstances appear. So be very patient, and once you find the right moment, you go all in. And that's how they made all their money, really, being very patient and going all in after making a decision about their business investments. It's kind of fun to sit there and outthink people who are way smarter than you are because you've trained yourself to be more objective and more multidisciplinary. Furthermore, there is a lot of money in it, as I can testify from my own personal experience. Charlie seeks to calculate the intrinsic value of the whole business and with allowance for potential dilution. On this subject, he's famous for his viewpoint that a great business at a fair price is superior to a fair business at a great price. Charlie's checklist for investing is a list of 10 things here I'll quickly go through. Equally well applies to making insanely great products. Number 1, risk. All investment evaluations should begin by measuring risk, especially reputational risk. Number 2, independence. Only in fairy tales or emperors told that they're naked. So have independent thinking, I think is calling out. Number 3, preparation. The only way to win is work, 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 and hope to have a few insights. I think when you work on a specific problem or area and you work, 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 you do tend to have insights because you've spent a lot of time with it. So preparation. Number 4, intellectual humility. Acknowledging that what you don't know is the dawning of wisdom. I think that's something that he embodied all through his life. Being intellectually humble and acknowledging that he has a circle of competence. We'll come back to that in a little bit later too, on what circle of competence model is. Number 5, analytic rigor. Use scientific method and effective checklists to minimize errors. Number 6, allocation. Proper allocation of capital is an investor's number one job, he says. I think same thing, proper allocation of capital, effort, time is, I believe, a product builder's or product manager's number one job. That's where, you know, you come, you bring all your expertise and experience and your gut and intuition and learnings to prioritize what is important for customers. Number 7, patience. Resist human bias to act. I think this is something extraordinary when you talk about Buffett or Munger. They have so much patience once they've decided on a business and they've invested in it or bought the business. They just don't see any need for acting on it and, you know, constantly selling and buying and things like that. They just have a lot of patience and resist the human bias to act. Number 8, decisiveness. When proper circumstances present, act decisively with conviction. I think that is another important bit I lack, and I actually love to learn more from, which is like act decisively with conviction, like not just act decisively and then change. That's not going to get you anywhere. You have to be super convicted about the idea and the decision. And then number 9, change. Live with change and accept unremovable complexity. Number 10, focus. Keep things simple and remember what you set out to do. I think these 10 principles are absolutely, I think, wonderful game changers, even when you're building products or thinking about, you know, starting companies, founding companies. How do you embed these into, you know, what you do? I think is going to make a big difference in how successful you are at achieving your goals. Charlie, while addressing Harvard School graduates, he talks about the principle of invert, always invert. A principle giving students a surefire way to be miserable in life, and in one can avoid these things. If one can avoid these things, they can have a happy life. So Charlie talks about these things in his Harvard School graduates commencement speech. Interestingly enough, he starts out with 2 questions that are likely on everyone's mind at the commencement. Why was he selected to speak? Number 1. And number 2, how long is his speech? Talk about objectivity. I mean, even though he was the commencement speaker and he had a lot of experience, he was very successful. But, you know, not only humility, but also objectivity. Like, just what exactly is the audience pulse, right? The audience, high school graduates, so they are not necessarily looking to listen to a 60-year-old man. So number 1 thing on their head probably was like, why was this person selected to speak to us? And number 2, how long is our speech is going to be, so we can just be done with it and move on. So he talks about it. He just calls him out right off the bat in his commencement speech. And then he talks about a few things that they should do to have a miserable life. And number 1 was inject chemicals to alter mood or perception. This is something I think he's kind of took from Johnny Carson's speech earlier to the graduating school class. Number 1 was ingesting chemicals to alter mood or perception. And these are all, again, invert, always invert, right? Instead of saying, hey, what are the top three things or top 10 things I should do to be successful? Here, Charlie is taking the invert, always invert approach. Number two, have envy. Right? Having envy is also a surefire way to be miserable. And number three, resentment. Having resentment about things from the past and brooding over them and worrying about them and just constantly spending hours and hours about what has passed on instead of living in the present and building a better future. Number four, these are some things as Charlie has added on to, I think, Johnny Carson's top three things. Number four, be unreliable. Do not faithfully do what you have engaged to do. You will not only be outrun by a turtle, you will be outrun by lots of mediocre turtles and also by many mediocre turtles on crutches, he says. Number five, learn everything from your own experience. We talked about this earlier, like one of the more efficient ways to learn is to actually learn from others' experiences. Things like this, like reading about biographies or reading about products that were developed and what are some of the failures and why they failed, and learning from those experiences of other founders, other product builders is very important. So learning everything from your own experience is a sure shot way to misery and second-rate achievement, Charlie says. There was once a man who assiduously mastered the work of his best predecessors. Despite a poor start and very tough time in analytical geometry, eventually his work attracted wide attention, and he said of his work, "If I have seen a little farther than other men, it is because I stood on the shoulders of giants. The bones of that man lie buried now in Westminster Abbey under an unusual inscription, quote, here lie the remains of all that was mortal in Sir Isaac Newton, unquote. Number six, go down and stay down when you get your first, second, or third severe reverse in the battle of life, because there is so much adversity out there. Even for the lucky and wise, this will guarantee that in due course you will be permanently mired in misery." So that is going down and staying down when you get your, you know, punch in the face. I think Mike Tyson has an interesting quote on this, right? Many of you might have heard about it. I think Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And so the plans are essential, but planning is essential, but plans are not that great. I think that's a Winston Churchill quote. But I think basically having the resilience and anti-fragile nature that Nassim Taleb talks about, when something goes wrong, which eventually it will go wrong in new innovations and endeavors and adventures, and the ones who succeed are the ones who actually get up and keep going. So ignore at all the cost the lesson contained in the accurate epitaph written by Epictetus for himself. Quote, here lies Epictetus, a slave maimed in body, the ultimate in poverty, and favored by the gods. And lastly, number seven, ignore the story of a very young rustic who said, I wish I knew where I was going to die, and then I'd never go there. I guess basically this one, I think that number seven is about avoiding doing stupid things. Like when you know clearly something is going to happen, by doing X, Y, do it. I guess this is his point here. And unfortunately, it's much easier to say it than to practice it. Like we all know, for example, eating a lot of sugar is not a great thing. Just sitting around all day and not working out or things like that is not a great thing. But many of us just fall into the trap of doing those stupid things. And then you kind of fall prey to those. And Charlie's calling out that it's super important. Just avoid those stupid things that seem easy, but they're not actually easy. They're simple. They're not easy to follow. Makes me wonder actually what have I changed my opinion on from my younger days to now. Again, this is going back to being self-critical and not being complacent and learning, right? Are you self-critical to not believe everything you believe and are objectively checking if the belief still holds based on your experiences and learnings from others? I think that's super important. I feel like we should be open-minded about even our strongest opinions by being like flexible in terms of how strongly you hold the opinion. You have a strong opinion, but you hold it loosely in the sense that if someone is able to convince you with stories or facts or things that you feel are coming from objectivity, you are able to change your opinion on those. I think that's important. You can't really know anything if you just remember isolated facts. Here is, I think, Charlie really brings the synthesis of all these different facts that he has captured from different mental models, different fields, areas like science and physics and engineering and so on. So just remembering the isolated facts and trying to bang them back is not going to help, he says. If the facts don't hang together on a lattice work of theory, you don't have them in a usable form. You've got to have mental models in your head. You've got to have multiple models, not just one model. First, there is mathematics. Obviously, you've got to be able to handle numbers and quantities, he says. Basic arithmetic. It's not anything complicated. Again, keep it simple. One of his beautiful quotes I really fell in love with was, "Take a very basic idea and take it very seriously," he says. A lot of us like discount all these simple ideas because we think they're too simple, but I think I find it super useful to just take simple things and take them seriously, very seriously. So going back to Charlie's note here, and the great useful model is compound interest. It's such a simple concept, and Charlie and Warren Buffett have taken it super seriously, as we can see. They've really benefited from that. Compound interest is an elementary math of permutation, elementary math, right? It's return on investment to the power of time. And they've really, really used that to the best advantage. So some of the other things that he talks about are permutations and combinations in mathematics, decision tree theory, where you sort of have this logical flow chart of all the different branches when you're trying to make a decision, and basically looking at all of the possibilities and then making a decision, more informed decision. It's not that hard to learn. What's hard is to get you to use it routinely, almost every day of your life. I think that's the beauty of it. I mean, we all know these things to some extent, but using them in routinely, almost every day of your life, I think is an underlinable thing. It's really how you bring these models, such as compound interest and decision tree theory and things like that, into the things you do every day. If you don't get this elementary but mildly unnatural mathematics of elementary probability into your repertoire, then you go through life like a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. That's funny. It's really like you're not going in with all the tools you could possibly use. Then he talks about Karl Braun, an engineer, had a rule in his company, CF Braun Engineering Company, that was designing and building oil refineries. The rule is called 5 Ws: why. If you always tell people why, they'll understand things better. They'll consider it more important, and then they'll be more likely to comply. Even if they don't understand your reason, they'll be more likely to comply. Even if it's obvious, it's wise to stick in the 5 Ys. The notion of critical mass is another mental model he talks about that comes out of physics. It's another powerful mental model. The minimum amount of fissile material needed to maintain a nuclear chain reaction in physics, I think that's the critical mass. I think you can apply that to new product. When you have a critical mass, the new product sort of takes off and you see an inflection point in growth. You have this critical mass in network effects and a lot of other other areas as well in product building. So critical mass of gaining, critical mass of features and functionality and things like that. The other mental model Charlie also talks about is Gaussian distribution, the bell-shaped curve. And he says, I know that events and huge aspects of reality end up in this distributed fashion, a bell curve shape. Like, bigger is not always better is another interesting aspect. For example, he talks about motocross, which is run by a bunch of nuts who like to participate in tournaments where they turn somersaults on their motorcycles. Its profit margins would make you salivate. So occasionally, scaling down and intensifying gives you a big advantage. There are also great many advantages to scale as well. So it's not that bigger is not always better. Sometimes bigger is also better. Like, for example, he talks about Walmart with their network of retail stores. They have the purchasing power and they can negotiate better deals buying in volume for all their stores. So you have to sort of play the yin and yang for almost all of these things, right? You have to see when the model applies and when it doesn't. When technology moves fast as it does in a civilization like ours, you get a phenomenon that I call competitive destruction. Actually, this is Charlie again talking about in his one of his talks, but on this note of competitive destruction, later Professor Christensen wrote a book called Innovator's Dilemma that is about cannibalizing your own cash cow business before competition destroys you by building that, right? Like, we have seen that in many examples, like Kodak when they were king making cameras and photo films. And then when the digital cameras came on, they kind of lost the game to Canon and others. So I think that's what this whole thing is about, like competitive destruction. It talks about you either get into a different business or you're dead and you're destroyed by these innovations. So you have to sort of reinvent yourself and get into this different business. Like, for example, Kodak could have gone into this new business of digital photography, and they could have produced amazing cameras, digital cameras and other things like that, which they didn't successfully pivot to. It happens again and again and again. When these new businesses come in, there are huge advantages for the early birds. There is a model I call surfing. When a surfer gets up and catches the wave and just stays there, he can go long time. But if he gets off the wave, he becomes mired in shallows. For example, he talks about this cash register. Before cash register, a lot of companies or stores used to lose a lot of money because employees would steal the cash. But with the cash register innovation, John Henry Patterson, he was a small retailer that did not make any money. One day somebody sold him a cash register. Had instantly changed his business from losing money to earning a profit because it made it harder for employees to steal cash. Interesting thing about it is, like, you have to be open to ideas when you're doing like products, new products or innovation. You have to be open to what is working and then go after it. Sometimes we are like, oh no, but we built this product for X and this type of use cases and customers are using it for Y and Z. So we're going to turn off those customers, or we're going to, sort of like not pay attention to those customers. I think that is actually a bad idea, right? You have to see what is working. In this case, for example, this person, John Henry Patterson, he saw that he was in the retail business selling goods, but he saw that there was an interesting problem that's being solved by these cash registers. And so he said, instead of saying, oh, good, my retail business is going to be fine because of this cash register, he actually thought very differently. He said, I'm going to go into this cash register business. And of course, he created the National Cash Register, NCR, and he surfed that wave. I think surfing is a very powerful model, mental model. Then he talks about Warren and I tend to avoid surfing complicated technology. I think as much as surfing is a very powerful model, he also talks about not surfing is also a very interesting and mental model that they have applied when it comes to technology. After all, we are very cranky and idiosyncratic. We feel like we have no great advantage in the high-tech sector. And again, that is a very powerful idea, a good mental model, right? I mean, every person, company or product is going to have a circle of competence. And it is going to be very hard to enlarge that circle of competence. You have to figure out your own aptitudes. If you play games where others have aptitudes and you don't, you're going to lose. You have to figure out where you have an edge and you've got to play within your circle of competence. I think this whole circle of competence model, mental model, is super tough for many companies I've been in, or including my own personal life. I mean, we tend to think that we can do everything and sort of you spread yourself too thin, you don't focus, you don't niche down and go all in on a narrow area and try to really master that. And that's where you get into some issues, right? Even in companies I've seen where they get distracted building other types of products, when you're really good at something, you continue to innovate on that. When customers are paying you for it, the product, and you're super successful, you can, of course, go adjacent to that business and try to build other businesses. It's not a bad thing, but as long as it all falls within the circle of competence, I think you're okay. You have to figure out that circle of competence and where you really truly can shine and only play those games that you know you can actually win, or at least have a very good chance of winning. Lastly, I have a few short notes from his talks. I'll just go through them quickly. Don't sell anything you wouldn't buy yourself. I think this is an absolute gem when building products. You can build a product and you can sell a product. But if you yourself, for example, wouldn't be on the other side buying the product, then I think you shouldn't be selling the product is what he's saying. And you will have a very hard time selling the product if you yourself are not going to be someone who will buy it. That's a very simple rule, but a lot of companies violate that. Like, you sell crappy products to customers, but if you were sold the same product, you probably never invested in it to buy it, right? So avoid that. Second thing, don't work for anyone you don't respect and admire. I think product teams, when you're building teams to build products, I think you should, you know, bring together a team of people that you really deeply admire and respect. I think I've heard this from one of the interviews with Mark Zuckerberg of Meta. He talks about like how his criteria for interviewing and hiring people is like he thinks of it as like, hey, will I be willing to work for this person at some point in my life? And if the answer is no, then he would not go forward with that candidate. That means that you have a respect and you admire this person's capabilities, and so you wouldn't mind working for that person, right, at some point in life. So So that's number two. Number three, work only with people you enjoy working with. I think this is easier said than done. I mean, a lot of us have, I think, fallen into the trap of working with people or working with people we don't necessarily enjoy because we think we have to work with them, so we'll work with them. We don't necessarily have the choice sometimes, but obviously Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger have the choice because they own their business and they can call the shots. But sometimes in regular jobs and product management jobs and things like that in a big enterprise, you may not have the option to work with only people you enjoy working with. But if you can make that a goal, I think eventually you will find your crowd and your tribe. Spend each day, number four, spend each day trying to be wiser than you were when you woke up. I think this is something that tries back to his lifelong learning and doing. So Charlie, I think if you listen to his talks or, you know, listen to people talking about Charlie, you'll see that he's a biography nut. He loves to have a book with him all the time. He's always reading and learning from others. I think that's a beautiful habit we can all imbibe. Learning from other founders, other product builders, listening to podcasts about them, podcasts such as this one, or reading books about building products, innovation, and things like that, and learning from it. And just, you don't have to learn everything all at once, right? Like, just learn a little bit and try to be wiser than yesterday. That's about it. Number five, discharge your duties faithfully and well. We talked about this earlier. I think one of the things he talks about is really being all in and being very faithful to whatever endeavor you have taken on and not being half-assed about it. Number six, step by step, you get ahead. Not necessarily in fast spurts. I think this is about patience and building something over time. And I guess, like, yeah, we know the tortoise and the hare story. A lot of us in this new era of instant gratification and 30-second clips and TikToks and scrolling, and everybody has six-pack abs and everybody is rich and running around in Ferraris and all kinds of those things. It's so easy to lose sight of, you know, working hard and being patient with the results, but being impatient with action. I think that's another lesson I learned from another product builder. I think you have to be very impatient with your actions. Like, just don't sit and take your own time to build things or do things, but be very patient when it comes to the results of those actions. And that's how you create wealth and insanely great products as well. And lastly, he talks about three things that he found very helpful in coping with life's challenges. Number one, have low expectations. He keeps, Charlie actually often quips about it. He says, having low expectations is how I got married. That's how my wife married me, he says. And that sort of relates to the second point that he talks about in the three things I found very helpful in coping with life's challenges. And that is, have a sense of humor. Charlie actually lost his son when his son was probably a teenager. And he spent a lot of time going through that struggles. But he learned, one of the things he learned was, again, having a sense of humor. But also, he talks about not, you know, complaining about it and talking about it and worrying about what has happened and telling people about it again and again. Those things don't necessarily solve the problem that has already happened. And instead, he prefers to just plow through. I think he uses the word plow through. And having a sense of humor and plowing through the tragedies of life, I think is a super helpful life lesson. And lastly, he talks about surround yourself with love of friends and family. I think that is something that I read in, I think in the foreword in the book, Charlie Munger's Poor Charlie's Almanac. I think a foreword by Warren Buffett. I think Warren Buffett recalls that Charlie often took the bus when traveling to events or things like that with family. He would sit in the bus with family for hours while his counterparts and others might have taken a private jet all by themselves to save time and get there faster. But Charlie took the longer road, be patient, with the emphasis that he's talking about here, that is, surround yourself with love of friends and family. And Charlie had a plenty of that all through his life. So with that, I end this episode, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot more to talk about in terms of how we can use Charlie Munger's mental models to do product development and build insanely great products. And I'll probably do another episode on this, because there's a lot to learn. I really am a big fan of Charlie Munger and his philosophy and his mental models. And so, yeah, we'll come back to this again, hopefully sometime soon. But with that, I'll see you in the next episode. Until then, thank you so much for listening. And if you love the episode or love the show, please do subscribe if you haven't. And if you like the show, please do share it with your friends and family. Thank you. Cheers.